Well, Marcus, you just got back from touring, and what are your plans for the next month or two with Halloween?
Oh, we just had a little rest for like two and a half weeks. After that, we just kind of finished the festival season in Europe, which was like a lot of shows. We did like 16 shows on the weekends. We went out on the weekends in the summertime in Europe. We did a lot of funny festivals, and we met a lot of great people. You know, festivals are always great in Europe. You meet people that you haven't seen for quite a while. Then you hang around, you do your show, you share a couple of beers, you talk. It's been a real good summer for us. And as we're going to be in America soon, it's going to be, I guess it's like the last leg of the tour we are doing. Coming to the States in some 2 weeks or something. We're going to be there. We do some Russian shows in about a week or something. We do two more festivals here in Europe, and then we're coming directly to the States to do like a 4 week tour over there. Do like little clubs, 1,000-seaters or something. Yeah, that's what we're basically doing. We get two new tracks in for the set in the States because we have a different single there.
Mm-hmm.
We did a little video clip for that, especially for the States. And yeah, we come over, we play, we see what happens. You're all invited to come and have some fun and share a beer with Halloween.
Now, what track did you release for the U.S. and what video clip did you do? From the new album, what new video clip did you do from the new album?
We did a clip for the song "Paint a New World."
Ah, very good song.
Yeah, because we talk to people and asking them because the market is so different from what people do in Europe and what we do in Europe. So we're gonna ask people what they would like to have as a clip or as a single and stuff, and they pretty much decided. That this song would be a nice track for America for like a single and for like a clip and stuff like this, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So why not doing it? We did a little clip in Spain, some live shootings, and you know, I like the song. I love it.
Well, Marcus, why did you guys decide to record a video for "Paint a New World," and why have you decided to record and promote that song? I not record and promote that song, but why did you decide to push that song here in the U.S.?
Yeah, because we were asking a lot of people in America and record companies, because we don't know so much about what the people would like to hear over there, and so it's been recommended by all those people knowing the American market. And as it is, a song we have on the album we all love so much anyway, we agreed, you know.
Yeah, it's my favorite song in the album. So, and yeah, good choice, good pick for a song, really good.
All right.
Now, you released an album called Bass Invaders, which was nothing but bass and vocalist drums and stuff like that, no guitars. And where did you come up with the idea to release something like that?
The idea I had in a pub drinking beer with some friends, and suddenly I had this idea that something like this, I don't know, it just got in my head, you know, and mostly when you have ideas, when you sit with friends drinking a lot of beer and stuff like this, you always forget about it the very next day. But this idea I just couldn't really forget about. And then I thought it's time to start something like this, you know. And it's just like, it's not an album where you have like bass playing only, and there's a lot of solo stuff and jazz and blues and jazz and funky tunes on it, or how good everybody can play the bass guitar. It's just like very, very song orientated, you know. It's songs with distorted bass guitars, and you have the drums, you have the vocals, and you have like a normal song arrangement with like chorus lines and bridges and verses. It's just like normal songs, just without any guitars. Therefore, I have a lot of distortion put on the bass guitars, you know, experimenting how it could sound without the guitars at all. And I have a lot of guests. Bass Invaders is like the main core of the Bass Invaders band will be Schmier from Destruction, Vivi from Rage, and Tom from Sodom. They're all singing bass players, you see,
mm-hmm.
and they sing and they write songs, and everybody who's writing a song, he's going to sing it, of course, and I have a guest singer for the songs I wrote because my voice is really crap. But this was the idea for the solo bits and parts. I invited people like Billy Sheehan, Rudy Zazo, Lee Rocket from the Stray Cats, Wizard from Mother's Finest, Marco Mendoza, and all those people are playing bass. Nips from Saxon, you know.
Mm-hmm.
All those people are playing little solo appearances on this album. It was just an idea, you know. When I'm sitting at home and I have nothing to do, I have to do music, of course. And this is what I recorded then in my spare time. This is basically it. This is the Bass Invaders.
Well, why did you decide to have no guitars whatsoever and just use bass guitars?
Oh, why? Or when?
I mean, why did you decide to just do all bass?
It's been an idea. I was trying to find out if this will work, you know, if this will sound any good at all. And I recorded the bass guitars with a real clean line, you know, just directly into the desk with a very good preamplifier. And then I went into the studio and I was squeezing all those clean signals through like real Marshall amplifiers and Soldano amplifiers and all that, you know, to give it a bit more of a distortion character. And I found out it sounds very, very good. It sounds like it just sounds different, you know.
So you played bass guitars through guitar amps?
Yeah, actually it's like this, you know. It's been like after I did the clean signal with the clean signal, I went into studios where there's a lot of amplifiers and actually re-recorded them. And I was adding it to the session.
Really, it's a very interesting, you know, mm-hmm. album to be doing, and it's a very interesting idea. Do you plan on maybe doing something else like that again? Do you plan on doing something else like that again? Maybe doing a second?
I don't know. It's been a very hard work. It's been a very tough job to get all the guest stars together, you know, to get all the guest appearances together, because suddenly I had to deal with, like, agents and management and people like this, you know. And it wasn't so much the recording that took a long time. It was more like, you know, getting all those guests together to play a little solo part, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It took me like 3/4 of a year to get them all together because they're all touring, they're all doing different stuff. But it was funny, you know. Once I have a second option from the Japanese record company to do a second one, but, you know, you just need a lot of time to do so. But, you know, it's been a great experience, and I think it sounds just great.
Now, what's it like to do an entire tour with Gamma Ray?
It's nice, because after 1 or 2 weeks, it all felt very familiar, you know, to have them guys always around, and, you know, as on a tour, you see each other 24 hours a day, and you play together on stage even and stuff like this. It became very familiar after a while. And then we did a couple of shows in Australia and in Asia, and here and there without them, we kind of missed them already.
What's it like to play on the same stage with Kai Hansen again after all these years? You know, you guys were in a band together way back in the day, and all of a sudden you're touring together. What's that like?
I saw Kai from time to time here in Hamburg. I was on his birthday a couple of years ago, and I see him in clubs and bars sometimes. Not very often, but we see from time to time, so it's normal to have him around, actually, and it's nothing real big special because we didn't see for, like, years and years and years, you know. We
mm-hmm.
used to hang around here and there. Not constantly, but it's kind of normal when we see us, you know. So this made it all a little easier. Made it all even more familiar. And for the others, it was like, you know, no problem. We don't have any harms. There's no bad feelings. and this we do, everything we do has been agreed in before we started the tour, and all that has been, you know, pretty much settled. So everybody knew what was going on, and everybody knew the time on stage, and all that. All that's been arranged already, and there was no problem at all. So that made it really, really easy.
What do you think of Michael Kiske doing acoustic songs of the old Helloween songs that he wrote and recorded with you guys way back in the day?
I didn't hear it yet. I heard about it, but I never heard a song. So it can be interesting, of course. It's all depending on how he does it and how it sounds, you know. And I don't think it's a bad idea to do acoustic versions of Helloween songs.
Mm-hmm.
So why not? And he has a wide range. His voice has a wide range. Why not doing acoustic songs, you know? Mm-hmm. His voice can do. I can imagine his voice is very, very good for stuff like this, just only with an acoustic guitar, a little bit of jamming and his voice. He can use it this way, so I can imagine it sounds pretty good, pretty cool. But I haven't heard it yet, so.
What's the biggest difference for you recording an album now than, say, like back in the Keeper of the Seven Keys era back in the late 80s?
It's you think about what you did in the past, and then you try to do something fresh, to do something new. When you start writing a song for a Helloween and for the next Helloween album, you try to keep it fresh. You try to keep it, yeah. You try to create a little new aspect to what Helloween is supposed to be, because you did a lot of records, you did a lot of songs already. So it's not easy to find a way on one hand you have to keep like the Helloween line, the Helloween track, you know. On the other hand, you as an artist you wanna add something fresh to it, which is not easy after all those records. It's very, very hard to begin with a track for a new album, but then once you're into it, you don't think about it. Once you have an idea and developing the idea and working on it, once you're into the process very deeply, you don't think about this, but you just have to find a start, you know.
How about with recording, with all the new technology and stuff, you know?
It's not so much the technology, that's what we have a producer for. It helps recording ideas, of course. It makes it all much quicker, and you can have it on tape, like, very, very easy. Even on tour with, like a little Macintosh computer, you can have an amazing demo tape of what the idea was, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's very, very helpful. But if it comes to the real big production, we definitely need a producer. Otherwise, we would kill each other, having too many ideas, having too many opinions, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I would say.
What do you think of the way music is distributed now? First it was vinyl, then CDs, and now iTunes and downloads. And what do you think of this?
Well, it's the future, you know. You can't go back and you can't stay back in time saying you don't like what happened today. You just love what was done before. But if you don't go with that flow, you somehow got stuck. We all gotta find a way to deal with it somehow, because it's unstoppable. You cannot stop the business. You cannot stop the way business is working, you know. Either you play with it, either you play in this game, you play in this business, or you just don't agree, but then you don't do it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the way it goes. I mean, you can't stop the business from the way it goes. And if you want to play with it, you got to go with it somehow. You can't change the big rules, you know. You play your music, then you got to make CDs the way it is today. Otherwise, it's also a matter of the budget you have. It's a matter of the record company, if they would like to pay for more studio times or for more recordings. And, you know, it's also a matter of 20 years ago we've been recording on vinyl. You have, like, especially Helloween we have very long tracks. We have like 6 tracks or 7 tracks on a record on one album, and it was full. You know, today you have like they won't let you out of the studio unless you have like 16 tracks, and then they want to have one for an internet release, and then they want to have one for like a bonus track for Japan, they want to have a bonus track for Europe or America, and then all that extra stuff you have to record, you know, without, you at least need like 16 songs to be done with your recordings to choose from, and then there's like 11 or 12 of it on the CD, and then they need another 2 for this reason. It's just like the amount of songs you need to record to finish the product is more than double what it used to be, you know. And then you have all like internet max and all that kind of stuff. It's just totally changed, you know. When we started off, there was a couple of magazines, there was a couple of interviews, and you did your record, and then you did your tour, and that was it, you know. Today it's just like, I don't know, 100 times more magazines and stuff, and internet magazines and stuff like this, you know. Which is good, you know, it spreads it more, but very, very different from the 80s. 20 years ago, you recorded maybe 10 or 12 songs or something, or maybe 10, and then you choose 8 to be on the album, and then you still have like 2 B-sides.
Well,
those days are over. Those days are gone.
my question for you: you have obviously 2 songs on the album, and you have a B-side. And you know the song "Final Fortune" and "Heaven Tells No Lies." What did you write those tracks about?
Why or where?
Well, what were they about? Like, what did you?
Well, it just pumped in my head like this, and I have these lines, and I put them in, and there's, of course, Andy developing the whole thing, because I give him some ideas, and then with the melodies combined with some vocal kind of lyric lines, and he sits there, combines it with the stuff he has in mind, and so this combination is always very good to do songs with him, you know.
Mm-hmm. Now, what's it like working with you've worked with Charlie for Bauerfein for a lot for mm-hmm. Now I believe this is your 4th album with him, and
yep.
You know, what's it like working with him, and why have you decided to keep working with him?
Yeah, it's like we like to have a kind of a family business going on. As also when we're touring, we have a lot of crew members we like to keep as often as possible. Sometimes when the festival season comes, they do have different jobs, but then, you know, we have the sound guy, we have the monitor guy, we have the backline crew. Most of the time, they're all the same people. And so we like to work with Charlie because he's doing an amazing sound. We know the way he works, and we like the way he works. And, you know, it's just a routine we like to have, which is very, very positive for the record, if you ask me.
Now, this album is a lot heavier this time around than many of your previous albums. And why did you decide to go in that direction?
Mostly it's like the guitar sound we like to have a little more heaviness in. I don't know, we just decided to keep it a little bit more heavy, and sound wise from the guitar, maybe this is what you call a bit more heavy, but this is what we actually decided, this is what I wanted to have.
And I guess my actual last real question will be, you know, what do you have to say to all the people in the U.S. and, you know, stuff like that, I guess.
I hope you're still going to be there. I think we haven't been there for quite some years. I hope there's still some headbangers running around willing to see Halloween, willing to see a real rock show. You know, I'm coming, and I'm still, you know, we still have the guts to come over. We still have the guts to play all around the globe. We're still coming over. I hope you are ready for us.